If I come across Tina before you guys will, I will let her know about this podcast.
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Welcome back to Lyrics for Lunch, the show that is the one who makes a brighter day. So let's start giving. I am Aviv Rubenstein. I am your host, one of your hosts. Joining me, as always, on this magical mystery tour is...
Lindsay Tucker. Hello, it's me. So great to be here, as always.
But we have a very special guest today. Comedian, podcaster, host of The Kendra Crump Show, Kendra Crump.
Yes, thank you guys so much for having me. I made it off the Section 8 waiting list. I'm here.
We did it. We did it. We're pretty...
We are so excited that you're here.
Yes. As soon as Lindsay told me the song that you had picked, I was like, fuck yes. Because I know of the song, and I'm sure that there are 1,000 amazing stories about it, but I don't know any of them. So real quick, before we get started... Lindsay, what is this show? What do we do here?
This is a show where we tell you the weird, sometimes funny, sometimes depressing, hopefully always interesting stories behind some of pop culture's biggest and brightest songs.
Biggest and brightest. It's Hollywood's biggest night. So Kendra, tell us.
Are you cold?
Yeah, it's chilly. I got a new hat. I just put a hat on.
I was going to say, you got to show off the hat now. You got to show off the hat.
I got to show off the hat.
You pay good money for it.
Kendra, tell us a little about yourself. Who is Kendra?
I'm a free-spirited person. I would say hippie, but everybody just automatically thinks Snoop Dogg. And I'm like, guys, stop it. It's multiple types of hippies, right? I am a recent graduate from Clark Atlanta University. Got my bachelor's, degree back there, as you guys can see. The rest of the world can't, but y'all can. Yes, from Clark Atlanta. The major was mass communications with a concentration in radio, TV, and film. Really? You're in like radio. This is radio in a way, right? Podcasting.
Yeah, considerably older than you, but yes, that was what my concentration was at Boston University.
Okay, Boston University. What was the mascot?
The Terriers.
Whatever that is. All right, beautiful.
I was gonna say Bulldog. I thought it was Bulldog.
I was gonna say that the Clark Atlanta was a Bulldog. What was your mascot?
We are the Panthers.
Oh, cool. That's a lot cooler than Terriers.
That is hey. We're the Boston Terriers.
All right. I went to Emerson in Boston.
Go Lions. Lion. Yeah.
Yes. I think the Lions, between a lion, a terrier, and a panther, I think the lion comes out on top. So I like your school the best. But yes. So the goal is to have my own radio and television show. So what I've been doing is just, I got my own podcast. And of course, I have been jumping on people's podcasts. I'm like a podcast whore. I've been on at least 800 podcasts since October 2020.
Wow, we're just another notch in your belt, aren't we?
Listen, Joe Rogan wasn't answering, so I got to come to other people. Hopefully that wasn't offensive. So that's who I am, and I'm just that's who. That's it. That's me in a nutshell.
We're psyched that you're here. Super, super psyched.
Yeah, we are.
Did you know, Lindsay?
I just got a vaccine booster and I feel like my face is very red.
It is.
So I'm sorry. I just got vaccinated.
You know what you can help with that? Anyway. You know what you can help with that? I'll tell you the redness. It's called putting sperm on your face. It works. That's why my skin is so clean.
Oh, okay. All right.
Don't be like.
I have too much beard. The beard to sperm ratio is all.
Well,
fucked
you know
up.
What? If you have a woman come on your face, like it makes your beard like more flourishing. It seems like you've been doing pretty good, right?
Well, I was gonna tell it an amusing anecdote, but that was now I can't follow that. So tonight, what are we gonna be talking about?
We're gonna be talking about We Are the World. Come on, no, like this is no other greater song than this. We are the world.
We Are the World. And so I don't even know. I mean, I know like who sings this song because I like know that it's like a Rolodex of famous people from the 80s. But like, is there like a band name?
Yeah. Supergroup USA for Africa.
USA for Africa is the name of the group.
We.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna sit back. I'm gonna kick my feet up, and I'm gonna let you both educate me on We Are the World.
You want me to take it?
Yes.
All right. We Are the World was recorded by Supergroup USA for Africa for We Are the World album, released in March of 1985, The year of Aviv's and mine's birth.
Yes,
Kendra.
Our mothers.
I was
were
just
pregnant.
About to say, where were y'all in 1985?
In a belly.
In the womb.
Yeah.
In March. We came out later. Okay. We're not twins, despite the way that I'm speaking.
We are twins, actually. You can't tell.
What a time to have been alive, born during a crack epidemic. It's beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Gotta love Reagan.
I feel like anyone born after the year 1982 was born during the crack epidemic.
Lisa, I believe it. I was born during the Freaknik era. That was a good era, the late 90s. Beautiful.
The Freaknik era. Yeah, Poetic Justice. Forget about
that
it.
That was a terrible movie. Anyway.
All right, yeah. So We Are the World was written by Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie and produced by Quincy Jones.
Shit.
Yeah. Mm. It raised over $60 million to fight hunger in Africa after its March 7th release.
Holy fuck. Oh, wait.
Okay. Can I say something about that part real quickly that just came to my mind? I hope this doesn't sound racist, like, to any, you know, any people out there, or just something that I just keep thinking about. You guys remember the infomercials as kids or young adults, and they would have the children, the hungry children in Africa.
Yeah,
and
with, like, the flies on their face.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, mm-hmm. So you guys raised all this money, and the kids, are these, like, paid actors, actresses? I wonder those things. I really wonder.
Are they getting their SAG cards for being in this commercial?
We've talked about these like UNICEF commercials, yeah. Documentaries on the show in other episodes, one being Toto's Africa. and it definitely is going to play a role in this episode too.
I just found out that in Germany, they have these commercials, but for Americans. They're like, feed a hungry American.
Americans are obese.
No,
really.
Like you know, one in five Americans deals with food insecurity. Like feed a hungry American. They like I've seen these commercials.
They really do.
They really, really do.
Wow, you learn something new every day. I didn't realize that yeah. They even portrayed us in that way. But the $60 million. Let me ask you guys this question: do you feel like that money went to somebody, like any child, or was it just like, okay, let's just pretend we raised it, like let's just say we did it, and then like really
to the cocaine budget of Lionel
yeah!
Richie's cocaine budget?
Yeah.
I mean,
really I'm not sure. I really don't know. The song was partially inspired by this earlier Band-Aid single, which is really fucking atrocious. Do They Know It's Christmas?
I was going to do a Do They Know It's Christmas episode. I was going to do a Bob Geldof episode.
Okay, so we're going to back this up. In October 1984, actually, this isn't even backing it up, really. This is exactly what we're talking about. In October 1984, British journalist Michael Bourke went to Ethiopia to report on the famine. He brought with him a Kenyan photojournalist who filmed footage of kids with ribs exposed from hunger, the things that we're talking about here, flies on their faces, you know the drill. So their report aired on the BBC where Bob Geldof saw it and quickly wrote Do They Know It's Christmas, which became popular during the holidays and allegedly raised about $10 million to help fight the famine.
I want it on record.
Now, do we want to listen to this song?
To Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yeah.
No, I never want to listen to Do They Know It's Christmas ever again in my life. I think that is one of the most fucked up songs in the history
well,
of the world.
This is the song that inspired We Are
All
the
right,
World.
Let's listen
so we
to
listen
I mean,
to it.
I'll listen to it, but under protest.
At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish it. And in our
So, not to be like the crabby Jew, but like, Why? Like, okay. So this, the premise of this song is everyone is starving in Africa. We are so very sad because they aren't aware that Jesus died for their sins. And a fat man in a red suit. They don't have chimneys for him to come down. Like, what the... Why the fuck?
It might be the most condescending song
so
of the whole
It is so condescending.
Time.
And
more condescending than Rains Down in Africa.
And so, like, kind of colonialist, like, bullshit. Like, the greatest gift we could give the starving Africans is making them aware
Santa
that it's Christmas time.
It's got a nice little ring to it, but I wouldn't listen to this again.
I also hate you too. I hate Bono. So.
Oh, this is Bono?
Yeah, he's the one that went, instead of you. I get shit.
You know how like we all had that one celebrity we just don't like for no reason? Is he that one celebrity for you?
I have a huge.
Does anybody actually like Bono?
Dads.
Yeah, it's okay to me.
Here's to them underneath that burning sun. Fuck.
Do they know it's Christmas
fuck
time at
you
all?
You guys. There's Bob Geldof.
Oh, that's wow. Did the kids even like? My thing is like, are the kids like? Did they give the kids permission to like take a picture of them, or they just did it without their?
No,
consent?
They probably just did it because like, are the kids gonna sue?
They should.
They should.
It's never too late, right?
I feel like there's a statute.
Time to cash in.
Yeah, this song is
pretty bad.
Yeah.
The epitome of like white saviorism.
Yeah.
Had you never heard this song, Kendra?
I would never want to hear it. Thank you guys for introducing me to such tragedy.
Yeah.
I love
sorry.
It.
One of the worst songs in, like ever.
I would never want to hear it. Well, welcome to the show. So. Harry Belafonte is aware of this song.
Is aware of
and
Do They Know It's
now
Christmas.
Wants to raise money. Yes. Okay. He wants to arrange a concert with African-American musicians to raise money for the cause.
Love that.
The logistics were hell, getting it all together, and Geldof had already demonstrated the power of a single song. So I'm going to let Lionel Richie tell you in his own words what happened on the CBS Morning Show.
Well, it was a phone call that actually called us all to arms. It was Harry Belafonte who called, as one gets a phone call from Harry Belafonte late at night, thank you very much. And he said, listen, we've got a situation here. We've got white folks saving black folks, but we don't have any black folks saving black folks. What are we going to do about that? The seed was planted. And I said, let me get back to you, Harry. And the next person I called was Quincy. And Quincy said, well, let's do something about this. And then, of course, I'm talking to Michael. And then there's Stevie. And then we started a little buzz here. That's when I realized, okay, if two or three or four of us are gathered together, sounds like a good prayer here, then we can get something done. To this day, I look back on it, it was so magical, it was so divinely guided, because it's an impossibility today to sneak up on the world. You follow me? In other words, that you can't scheme on. We had
social media.
It was a surprise attack. When I say that, no one was expecting it. But that night was the most magical time ever, because I asked Quincy that night, how are we going to do this? Is everyone going to be in the room separately? And Quincy said, no. We're all going to be in a circle. Now, the only way you can pull that off is everybody in that room is a pro. You only have one line to sing. And with your eyes closed, you're supposed to know who that is singing. Now think about that.
I feel like Michael Jackson just really contributed to like 99% of that song. That's honestly what I think. I feel like it was just really Michael, and he's like, hey, I just don't want to be by myself. Let's bring a whole crew into it.
So Michael and Quincy had like a relationship, right? Like they had worked together previously?
Yes, they definitely had to. Because Quincy Jones is like the man, like in of music, and Michael was like, "I'm up here too. Let's just, you know, get together."
So it goes from Harry Belafonte to, I don't know if his first call is Lionel Richie, but okay, to Quincy to Michael, and now, I mean, I think that the thing that is interesting, the most interesting thing that he has to say is like, the voices that they're looking for are so iconic that you need to be able to identify them instantaneously.
So should we hear it so we can think about that for ourselves? We hear the song.
Of course we should.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's listen to We Are the World.
Okay.
I've heard Do They Know It's Christmas a lot, and I know that I've heard We Are the World, but I can't actually I can probably hum the chorus.
That's all that matters, right? You know the chorus.
Yeah. Maybe I can't even hum the chorus.
Okay. I got you guys. No, that was pretty good. That was pretty on.
Sick. Oh, the wonderful world of Disney.
It reminds me of Newsroom or something.
Mm-hmm.
It seems so, like, it's just so melodic and so...
Oh, that's so many people. Ray Charles?
Oh, yeah.
There comes a time when we heed a certain...
No, I've never heard this song before.
When the world...
What? Yes, you have!
...together as one. There are people...
Did y'all see Stevie Wonder's His Eyes Are Open? Did y'all catch that?
Yeah. This is your big conspiracy theories that Stevie can see?
The National Choir said that he can. They said something positive about him.
We can go on pretending day by day that someone,
Tina, Billy Joel. You just want to see Billy Joel in here, Lindsay.
I didn't even pick the song!
Billy Joel sucks. And the
truth, you know love is all we need. I kind of wonder how did Tina go to bed like that with her hair like that.
Socks.
So, okay.
And glove.
But, like, they're all in the recording studio. You're supposed to be wearing comfortable clothing, and he is dressed like a Spanish matador with one glove, Diana. Yeah. Who's that?
That's Dionne Warwick.
Dionne Warwick.
Dionne Warwick.
She's in a war with the mayonnaise company.
She's hopping
the best. And so we all must lend a helping hand.
Oh, Bruce. There's no one whiter than Bruce.
Really? Is he mayonnaise white?
He's New Jersey white.
What about Bon Jovi?
Oh, Cindy.
She just seems so free spirited.
And her voice is so high.
Who that?
I don't know. Who's that blonde woman? Tipper Gore.
We are the children. We are the ones who make a brighter day. So let's start giving.
Ray has no headphones on.
I was gonna say he has a cup in his hand. Aren't you supposed to not have like drinks?
That's
in the
a holler and oat.
That is an oat.
I think that's Jesse Jackson.
Jackson. Oh my God, Bob Dylan. Why, man? Why? It's true, we make a better day.
crazy.
It's
why is she not? She does not have no movement. The girl next to Ray Charles, she's not doing nothing. She's not even singing.
Well, she's worried about bumping into Ray.
Oh, please. You can move. You know how to move.
Dan Aykroyd? There's Harry Belafonte.
Yeah. Just you and me.
All right, let me hear you. We are the world. We are the children. Yeah, we are the children. We are the ones who make a better day. So let's start giving. There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day. Just you and me.
Stevie went bald because his braids are pulled so tight.
Yeah, those dreads are pulled really tight. Like it
super tight.
It recedes on your hairline. That's why I had to cut my dreads every
Really?
Couple years. Yeah, it will. It gets heavy. I'm telling you, my neck almost snapped off washing my hair one day.
I just always assumed that that's why he went bald.
It will. It gets heavy. It's like having very long hair. It pulls on your hairline. You have it pulled back in the back, like in a ponytail. It wears on your hairline too.
Oh, LaToya!
Did you see her Playboy video?
No.
Did you see the video?
Why would I have seen LaToya Jackson's Playboy video?
I mean, come on, who doesn't? Who didn't want to see that? It's hot stuff.
She looks like Michael, like a little too much.
So is Janet. Who would you hit, LaToya or Janet?
Who would I hit?
Yeah,
LaToya or Janet? Clearly Janet.
Aviv's not picky. He would do either
That's
one.
True. No, I mean, Janet's way more talented.
That's James Ingram. So I'm going to tell you guys a fun fact. My father worked in the music industry. He was like recording record producer. So all of these people, 98% of these people showed up at my house before I was born.
Shit.
I didn't even get a chance to meet them. That's bull crap. Like, it's a true story.
I would have died meeting Ray Charles. Ray Charles is one of my dad's favorite artists, and I just thought, I think he's one of the most.
Where were you when he passed away in 2004?
I was at home. I was either a senior in high school or a freshman in college. But I remember he passed right before the movie came out. That's kind of the only thing I remember about it.
Gotcha.
Let's start giving.
Where were you when you found out?
In 2004?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was like 6 years old.
Mother. See, I didn't ask because I knew I was going to be upset by the answer.
I didn't. So, you know, I wasn't allowed to watch that movie, Ray. Like, this is how my father was, right? He was one of those dads who was caring at the wrong times. He did not want us to watch PG-13 movies until we were actually 13, even though that's not what it stands for.
Oh, hello.
He did not want us to watch R-rated movies until we were of age. But I get to high school, and I'm like, guys, don't you realize in high school it's rated X? Kids are having sex in school. In school, while school's, like, going on, kids are cursing up a storm. People just say, you know, shit, damn, fuck all day long. I'm like, what are you mad about? You know, so, like, it's literally, you know, fights happen. Come on now. So why can't I see this R-rated movie again? But, you know, that's how dad was. He was careful.
Just a ton of drug use. He's, like, shooting heroin all the time in the movie.
Oh, that's what it is? Oh,
yeah,
okay. Have y'all ever actually known somebody who actually was a drug addict or still a drug addict?
Yeah.
So would you see them do drugs in front of you? Have you ever walked in on somebody just doing, like, hardcore drugs in front of you?
Yes, so.
Like, what kind of drugs?
Weed does not name
like
anything.
Like, shooting up?
Yeah, shooting up, cocaine.
No.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I've seen a ton of coke.
So meth. I will say I had no.
I've never seen meth. To my knowledge,
I've seen people who are high on meth or people who are addicted to meth. But I will say I think the statute of limitations has passed on this. That I can say this in 2007, summer of 2007, I lived in like a college kind of party house. And I had a roommate named Jerry who made his own opium. he like would buy poppy plants online and like make his own opium for. And
how do you make opium?
I don't know. There's like rubbing alcohol is involved because the house smelled like rubbing alcohol for like months. And then he like got himself addicted to it. And then like we saw him a month later and he's like, yeah, I like that opium just like a little bit too much. So I had to lock myself in my room until I didn't like it anymore. And yeah, so I don't know what happened to Jerry, but
sounds like he got clean.
I would.
Why don't you, did you try to find him on Facebook?
No, I don't have Facebook anymore. I could.
We've deleted his Facebook.
I still have it. I can look him up. But I will tell you guys, it sounds so freaking bad. But I'm gonna just keep it real with y'all because we're family. I can keep it real with y'all.
We're family.
I want to go to Colombia where they have real cocaine there, and I want to try it, and then I will be done with it. That's how I am. I'm like, I'm a one-time like hardcore drug user, but I will not do meth. I don't want to do heroin. I don't want to do the stuff that is in other countries that hasn't made it out here yet. Spice, I don't want to do any of that. I'm like, guys,
What is spice? Is that like from Dune?
That's synthetic weed. You can go buy it at the gas station. Then you have angel dust. I can't do that.
No. So update. Jerry has a PhD and an MBA. He's doing fine.
He's
the director.
He got himself clean.
Yeah, he's director of science outreach at some company.
Well, if you don't want to, you know, make it to Colombia, you know, like I learned that you can just scrape your money and then cocaine's going to fall out. But
there you go. That's absolutely correct.
That's from the 60 million that We Are the World made is like all of the cocaine that's
going. Of course it is. Of course. But I was surprised that it did make 60 million. And it kind of makes me wonder, do you guys like know if there were donations? Like how are they collecting the money?
How did that work? Yeah.
Okay, so it sold more than 8 million copies in the US, raising more than 75 million. From this source, more than 75 million. The song was promoted alongside the music video, a documentary hosted by Jane Fonda, a special edition magazine, and like myriad books, posters, and clothing merch. So the promotion and the merch helped it raise, this other source said, more than 63 million, roughly equivalent to 149 million today.
That's a lot of money.
So the money total is unclear.
So I thought I recognized just about everyone in the video until they get to this like big group wide shot. So there's some heavy hitters there, but do you have like a list of all of the people that were a part of the song?
Most definitely. Let's list them out. We have Quincy Jones.
Boom.
Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, Kenny Rogers, James Ingram, Tina Turner, Billy Joel. He's pretty good. Michael Jackson, Diana Ross, Dionne Warwick, Willie Nelson, Al Jarreau, Bruce Springsteen, Kenny Loggins, Steve Perry, Daryl Hall. Don't know who that is.
Both Huey Kennys Lewis. Were there.
They were. Huey Lewis, not sure who that is. Cyndi Lauper. Kim Carnes, not sure who that is. Bob Dylan, Ray Charles. And then we have other people, the chorus, which is Dan Aykroyd. Not sure who that is. Harry Belafonte.
Dan Aykroyd was a ghost. What? He was a Ghostbuster.
Yeah, that was probably before my
Dan
time.
Dan Aykroyd, Blues Brother, Ghostbuster.
Saturday Night Live.
Father of Veda.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's before my time. All right. Harry Belafonte, Lindsey Buckingham. Not sure who that is either.
He's in Fleetwood Mac.
Okay, Mario Cipollinima, and they're of Huey Lewis and the News. Johnny Cola of Huey Lewis and the News. Sheila E. So I don't know who Huey Lewis and the News are. I just take it that they have five members all together.
They Sheila sang a song called I Want a New
Drug. Did they do the Ghostbusters theme?
They did not do the Ghostbusters theme. Ray Parker Jr. did the Ghostbusters theme. Huey Lewis did I Want a New Drug. And they did the Huey Lewis and the News did the Back to the Future theme, Power of Love.
All right, there
you
go.
That's Power of Love.
Yeah,
I don't know that song either.
Come to me for all of your 80s movies tie-ins.
I was going to say, yeah, I don't know that one either. All right, Bob Geldof. Not sure who that is. Bill Gibson.
Geldof is the Christmas guy, right?
Yeah. Bob Geldof is the Do They Know It's
Christmas.
Oh, see, you know what? That song was so bad, I already forgot all about who those people were. All right. Chris Hayes, Sean Hopper. And those three people are of the Huey, the rest of the Huey Lewis in the news. We have Jackie Jackson, LaToya Jackson, Marlon Jackson, Randy Jackson, Tito Jackson.
Wait, Waylon, so was this the last ride of the Jackson 5?
I feel like
sounds
it
like
was.
All of them were in there.
Minus Janet.
Minus was
oh wait,
Janet,
wait, Janet wasn't Jackson? Janet was in not Jackson 5. She was not in the Jackson 5. She was not in Jackson 5, but I think like you know, they had multiple other siblings, but like wait, the but then the Jackson 5, they had their own like group called the Jacksons before the Jackson 5.
Yeah, because I think that there were only three of them at one point. Yeah, but Jackie, Tito, Marlon, and another one,
Randy
and Michael were the Jackson 5. So this is the last known recording of the Jackson 5,
look at
plus
that.
55 other people.
Yes, we have next. You have Waylon Jennings, Bette Midler. I don't even know who Waylon Jennings is. John Oates, Jeffrey Osborne, and then you have the Pointer Sisters, and their names are Anita, June, and Ruth. And then lastly, you have Smokey Robinson. I did not even catch him in there. Those are the people. That's everybody.
Holy shit! How did Aykroyd wind up there? He's like not a singer.
Very curious. Yeah. Very curious.
Anyway, that's so many people.
I know Whitney Houston was around, like she came out like a year or two prior, and it made me wonder, how did she not make the cut? Because her voice is gold.
Yeah,
that's a good question. So Whitney's first record was 85. That was like her big rise was in her debut was February of 85, and this was recorded in March of 85, right?
No, that's when it was released.
Oh, so maybe they just missed her.
It was January 28th.
Oh, so it was like right before Whitney Houston's record was released. That's interesting.
Yeah, but that's why I wonder. I wonder, you know, was it like audition? Hey, let's audition for who's gonna, you know, hit this part. That's what I'd be thinking about, like when you have, like, especially with this big song, like, because you just can't have anybody. But there are some people you're like, how'd you make it? How'd you make the cut type of thing? You know, like you guys were just asking.
I think they were just calling people and using their network, to be honest. And there's more of a story here that I think it was the AMAs, the American Music Awards, were that night. So while that was happening, they were like siphoning people to get them to come to the recording.
Oh, crazy.
And I will tell that story in greater detail in a few moments. But first, I just wanted to talk a tiny bit about the lyrics, given this is Lyrics for Lunch. We tend to
sometimes
kind of brush over them. This is from Song Facts. Richie came up with the "We are the world, we are the children" line, and Jackson wrote most of the other lyrics.
So you were right, Kendra, where it's like Jackson did most of the heavy lifting and Lionel Richie's like, but we are the world.
Yeah, like we are the children. So Jackson wrote most of the other lyrics about how helping those in need benefits the giver. Quote, like, we are saving our own lives. I guess that's a lyric from the song. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is similar to some of Michael's other work, like You Are Not Alone and Heal the World. I feel like a lot of his songs, well, many of his songs at the time kind of had that compassionate theme.
Heal the World? What is Heal the World?
It's another Michael Jackson song. Oh,
because when you said Heal the World, I go, heal the world, let them know it's Christmas time.
Let's feed the world.
Oh, let's feed the world. Fuck.
Yeah.
Well, that answers that question.
And if you remember from the video, like Lionel Richie sang the first line, and he claims that he gave himself the first line of the song so that he could get out of the way. Quote, He said, I looked at the talent that was coming that night and I wanted to get out of the way early because when you start thinking Ray Charles is coming in that lineup, there's Springsteen sitting over in the corner and there's every major power singer in the world coming down that pipe. You know what? I wanted to get out of that barrage as soon as possible.
Yeah, whatever.
So we can talk about some of the other solos. Dionne Warwick was the 9th in the line of soloists, and it came after the chorus. She came in with Send Them Your Heart So They Know That Someone Cares. Tina Turner sang, we are all part of God's great big family.
Can I say something about Tina Turner?
Yeah.
She that yeah. part where talked about we are all God's great big part, you know, family. It makes me, I thought that was strange because, like, for her to say that because she's Buddhist.
They have multiple deities, I think, right?
Yeah, so I thought, I was surprised she even agreed. Maybe she became Buddhist, like, I know she became Buddhist at some point. So it makes me kind of wonder, like, was that before, like, that? Yeah. You know.
Can we find out when did she become Buddhist?
Yeah, because I know, yeah. like I said, I know she, have you guys ever had a Buddhist chant for you? Because I have, it was a yeah. podcaster Buddhist. And I wanted her.
We both used to work for Yoga Journal.
You tell okay, so tell me why. I do yoga. I do a lot of yoga, you know, and
tell me why.
I did not realize that a lot of people don't understand. Here's a fun fact. Those stretches are giving praise to those gods, right? And then I was mm-hmm. like doing some yoga, and then they're like, this person's very woke and like Christian guy. He says, you know, like, you're not supposed to be doing those types of stretches. I said, what are you talking about? He's like, you're giving praises to those gods, not your own God. I'm like, bro, can I finish my stretches, please? Don't be that person. Not right now. Yeah. I'm almost done type of stuff. But yeah, I didn't realize that namaste and all that other type of stuff was like Buddhist type of, you know, everything. I didn't realize I was doing anything bad.
But it's not. It's really not. It's not like worshiping an idol. That guy sounds like a...
Dogmatic in their religion. Yeah, I'm telling you what happens. You have, when a person becomes dogmatic in their religion, this is what ends up happening.
Tina transitioned to Buddhism in the mid 70s, but she never gave up her Baptist. She was raised Baptist, so she never fully gave that up. She referred to herself as a Buddhist Baptist. So I think that she like allowed that to happen. For maybe some of the Baptist side of her was like, let's do it.
All right. Well, yeah. They're super two guys.
Tina Turner is a really interesting person. We talked a little bit about her on our Phil Spector episode, but I'd like to do a full Tina Turner episode because she's.
How about you invite her on? You know?
Yeah,
do you think
Tina,
she's going to answer our calls?
Friend of the show?
I mean, anything is possible. I'm optimistic.
Yeah, let's do it.
How about this? If I come across, because, you know, I'm a people person, I just make friends with random strangers. If I come across Tina before you guys, I will let her know about this podcast.
Please,
and,
thank you.
Thank you.
And you guys, and y'all can, like, I guess, talk about one of her songs all together.
Yes, we love that.
Fuck yeah. We would love that.
Yeah, so 73 is when she began her Buddhist journey. But that is super okay. interesting. So, and this brings up the thing that I was curious about, which is like, yeah, I'm sure that they worked their network, but like, how did they choose what singer sang what line?
They were literally like putting tape down on the ground for like who would stand where and what their line would
amazing.
Be.
Amazing.
And Aviv hates Billy Joel, I just really had to include this bit that Billy Joel didn't really feel like his line had as much power or influence as the ladies.
Oh, shut up,
it
Billy.
If his line was, in the truth, you know, love is all we need. Quote Joel, I looked at those lyrics and I went, that's what I get? The truth, you know? And it was kind of a low part, too. I think a lot of people were trying to be virtuosos when it came to their part. I know Cyndi Lauper did.
Yeah.
Cyndi jumped into this whole other octave. Yay, yay, yay. But she can do that. She's a great singer. I think everybody wanted to put a little filigree on it, so they jumped out. I looked at my part and I thought, don't even try. Just hit the mark and shut up. It wasn't a time for me to show off.
Okay, can I give you a hot take? Conspiracy theory.
Give me your hot take.
So we know that Michael is friends with Paul McCartney. Mm. And the line is, the truth is, you know, love is all we need, right?
Right.
So
love
is
all we need.
I think that Paul said no. And they're like, well, who's a bigger dork than Paul McCartney?
And
then they went with Billy Joel.
Welp, in a 2020 interview with Esquire, Lionel Richie recalled the whole experience like this. We came in like little kids on their first day of kindergarten, and we were all kind of looking at each other, but we didn't quite, oh my God, there's that kid over there, and there's that other kid over there. Everyone was kind of freaked out standing next to each other for a brief moment. And then all of a sudden we realized, it's not about us. We're actually using our voice and our celebrity to save some people, and it's about us giving everything we have to save their lives. So I think the brilliance of that evening was we started out as 45 artists looking at each other and going, yeah, I'm famous and you're famous, but we left as family.
Except for Billy Joel.
Billy Joel.
Who's like not into it.
Okay, so there's an article called We Are the World Inside Pop Music's Most Famous All-Nighter from Esquire that gives like an hour-by-hour account of everything that happened that day, like 24 hours. I am not going to read you the whole thing, but I'm going to at parts read from it and at parts paraphrase from it, starting with Monday, January 28th, 1985 at 7:30 a.m.
7:30 a.m. Okay.
That's early pretty bird. Early for a lot of these folks.
I was going to say early bird. Well, you know what the thing is when it comes with like being in the studio, they be up. Like, you know what?
Yeah.
They literally like go days probably without sleeping. Like they take cat naps.
This is Esquire's lead. This is the lead to their story.
Okay.
It was early for a musician, for any musician, and certainly for Lionel Richie, who in January 1985 was one of the top pop stars in the world. His signature hit of the past 12 months, number one on the Billboard charts, was called All Night Long.
Okay, keep going, sorry.
All night. For crying out loud. He'd spent much of the past year on the road. New York, Hartford, Detroit, Vegas, Kansas City, Vancouver, Oakland, freaking Boise. It was a blur. The record company kept rolling out singles. Two went all the way to number one. Three more to the top 10. Then there was We Are the World, the song he wrote with Michael Jackson to raise money for famine relief in Africa. In Ethiopia alone, more than a million people had starved to death since 1983.
Shit.
There had been a lot of late nights in Encino lately, at Jackson's house, writing, rewriting, arranging, second-guessing. And the other night, they were here at Richie's house until it must have been 3 a.m, sitting on the floor, Jackson, Quincy Jones, Jones's arranger, Tom Baylor, and Richie's manager, Ken Cragen, the guy who put We Are the World together, writing on index cards the names of everybody they hoped would join the recording session, figuring out who is going to stand where and who would sing what part. Now, tonight, they would actually record it. But before that were the American Music Awards, televised on ABC, one of the biggest nights of the year. Cragen's master stroke in scheduling the recording session was doing it on the night of the awards, when so many artists would be in town. Richie wasn't just nominated for 8 awards, he was hosting the thing too. He was supposed to be over at the Shrine Auditorium by 10 this morning for rehearsals. It was 7:30 a.m. Early. They would run through the whole show, starting with a long opening dance number choreographed to Richie's big hit, Running with the Night, which he would perform wearing a gold lamé suit, surrounded by a dozen dancers.
I don't know the song, Running with the Night.
I don't know that song either.
None of us know it. You know what
We just gotta listen to it. We gotta listen to it.
Cause I wanna hear. I wanna sing. We're running with the shadows of the night. Which is definitely not Lionel Richie. That's like Patti Smith or something.
What if Lionel Richie wrote that song for her? So it could be Lionel Richie.
That would rule.
You never know. You never know.
Ooh, smooth.
I'm into it.
I like it already, too. This is good.
I'm waiting for like the real fun to begin. Ooh.
Okay. The drive to the shrine from Richie's house near the Bel Air County Club was about a half hour. 35 years later, when he was asked about that day, this is the first thing Richie will say. Let us trace the meaning of the words delirium and exhaustion. 2,500 miles away, Bruce Springsteen was getting on a plane. Talk about exhausted. The night before, he played the final show of the latest leg of the Born in the USA tour at the 50,000-seat Carrier Dome in Syracuse, New York. It was his 50th show that month, and it was epic. 29 songs over 4 hours, ending with a killer cover of John Fogerty's Rockin' All Over the World, reserved for special occasions. His manager, John Landau, had originally told Cragen that Springsteen was a long shot for this We Are the World thing. He'd been touring for so long, and he had a break before picking it up again overseas, and well, Landau would see what he could do. Then Landau called Cragen back a couple weeks before to tell him Springsteen was in, and the dominoes began to fall. Instead of Cragen calling managers and agents all day to recruit artists for this project, everybody started calling him. Bruce was in. Everybody wanted it. So that there answers your question, Avi. So now I'm going to take us to 6:30 p.m., about an hour into the AMAs. Huey Lewis, who would join the We Are the World session later, and Madonna, who wasn't invited to We Are the World.
Oh, Madonna's another huge oversight.
You cannot forget about Madonna. Come on now. Come on now.
I don't know. They didn't invite her.
You know what? She probably done pissed some people off, man.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they forgot. It sounds like they chose not to.
It's haterism.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. So Huey Lewis and Madonna announced the winner for the favorite black album category, Prince's Purple Rain.
Wait, Michael Jackson's
Thriller.
There was a black album category?
Favorite black album category.
That sounds
category.
So racist.
That's real bad. But Purple Rain beat out Thriller.
Do you feel like Purple Rain should have beat out Thriller?
I kind of do. Darling Nikki, which is our last week's episode, is on Purple Rain, and I fucking love Purple Rain. So, yes. They're two amazing albums, but I think I'll give the edge slightly to Purple Rain.
We also have like a very complicated Michael Jackson elephant in the room.
Yeah. There's a lot of accusations about Michael Jackson. This episode is not specifically about Michael Jackson, so he will get his own episode at length in the future. We just need to pick a song.
All right.
Until next time, friends. Yeah. So, Prince's Purple Rain beat out Michael Jackson's Thriller and Lionel Richie's Can't Slow Down. Prince was invited to the recording session, and Quincy Jones, who we know is the song's producer, had a solo picked out specifically for Prince. There had been talk about tension between Prince and Jackson, and Cragen loved the idea of like having them come together and overcome their beef for this great cause.
Sure.
And publicity.
But here's my question. How do beef start out? I feel like the label starts that mess. I feel like the label has something to do with the beef.
So yeah, the beef is definitely good for record sales, and you know, historically, like the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC beef was started by their record label. They were on the same record label. They had the same manager. I know that there was. I don't know if this is how the beef started, but I know that Prince was supposed to appear in the Beat It video, and like they were like gonna gang fight or whatever, but one of the lines was in the song was like, "Your ass is mine," and Prince is like, "Whose ass
this
is whose?"
The bad video. Bad music video. Yeah, your butt is mine.
Yeah, and Prince was like, I don't know what that means. I'm not gonna do it.
Okay. Well, he should just have some fun with it.
Yeah, but they were both. I mean, Prince was a Seventh-day Adventist and Michael Jackson was a Jehovah's Witness. They were very similar in a lot of ways. So I'm wondering, I think it may have just been that they were like largely occupying the same space musically, or like their brands were occupying the same space. And yeah, the label is like, well, there can be only one.
Okay, I just found this societyofrock.com. Newly released tapes shed light on decades-long feud.
Wait a minute. Did you just say Society of Frock?
Yes.
It's Society of Rock.
Oh, I didn't know what that was. I thought that was some type of website I ain't never heard of. I'm like, how to get
Lindsay.
There on the web?
Lindsay.
Because I was just looking at the URL, okay? Look.
Are you for real? This is another Lindsay Lohan Cool J all over again.
I forgot about that. Look, I just looked at the URL. It's obviously Society of Rock.
No, it's okay. It's past her bedtime. Let's just blame it on that.
The headline is Michael Jackson really, really hated Prince, and now we know why. Newly released tapes shed light on decades-long feud.
Love this.
Michael Jackson hated Prince and Prince knew it. In fact, stories abound of the Purple One going out of his way to deliberately irk Jackson, and to be entirely honest, they're pretty hilarious. While we know that Prince joined us in our amusement at Michael's expense and got more than a few laughs out of his late rival, this morning it was made clear that Michael was the only one unable to laugh at Prince's shenanigans. Mm. In newly surfaced tapes dating back to Jackson's 1988 biography, Moonwalker, The King of Pop revealed his intense dislike for Prince, calling him so rude, one of the rudest people I've ever met, and accusing him of being very mean and nasty to Jackson's family. Mm. Interestingly enough, Michael goes on to finally explain exactly why he couldn't stand Prince, and it all boils down to one sad truth: jealousy.
Oh.
Quote, "I don't like to be compared to Prince at all," Jackson is quoted as saying. "I have proven myself since I was real little. It's not fair. He feels like I'm his opponent. I hope he changes because, boy, he's going to get hurt. He's the type that might commit suicide or something." Mm.
Oh, fuck.
That's, you don't, not Michael. Michael said that?
I mean,
that's fucked up.
But also, like, just listen to kind of the word choice. He's got like the mind of a child. Like, I'm not saying that he's like stunted, but he, like, his argumentative style is like schoolyard, very schoolyard, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's not fair. I'm me and he's him. And I think that also, like, Prince at that time was like very adult in a way that Michael, like, never was like overtly sexual. Right.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that also may have kind of squicked him out a little.
Yeah. You know, Michael, what you brought up a good point. That does make sense. I think that's what happens when, you know, your father robs you of your childhood and you're not exactly really taught how to become an adult. And so you act out in that way. Was this before he had a publicist, or because I think publicist would have been great.
He had to get a new one.
I think a publicist would have been great at this time, man. You know, and now, you know what's so crazy, right? I have been thinking for so long. I was like, I wonder, you know, Mike and Prince, did they ever do an album together? Or not an album, but, you know, a song together? And I just kind of wondered about that. You know, no, let me ask you something. Did they ever, once Mike had died, what did Prince say on behalf? You know, because, you know, they got to always reach out or say something. Or did he not say anything?
This is from manyofmany.com, and it's the article is called "The Story Behind Prince and Michael Jackson's Rivalry." Prince at one point tried to run over Michael with his limo, which is pretty hilarious. And I think the closest they ever came to a collab was on "Bad" and on "We Are the World," which both fell apart. But it seems as though the last entry of this kind of diary was Prince doing a Vegas residency in 2006, which is 3 years before Michael passed. And Michael was living in Vegas, and Prince had Will I Am as a guest for his residency, and Will was also friends with Michael. So Will I Am arranged for Michael to be a guest in the to be in the audience for the show. And the next morning, Will I Am went over to Michael's house for breakfast, and they were talking about Prince, and apparently Prince was like playing the bass right in Michael Jackson's face at the show. And Michael at breakfast with Will I Am goes, "Why do you think Prince was playing the bass in my face? Prince has always been a meanie. He's just a big meanie."
Not a meanie. Not he's a, always you mean been, as an adult, like when he's in his 50s, he's saying, "You're a meanie."
He's saying meanie in 2006. This is what I'm saying is, like, I really think that he is like a very child, or was a very childlike, had a very childlike way of seeing the world, and like couldn't, you know, Prince was giving him some shit, and they were like jawing back and forth, and I don't think Michael could take it because, you know, he had been abused for the first 20 years of his life. Like, it's not
right. I mean, brains with trauma do not always develop past that point.
And frankly, Prince was also like had like a really rough childhood too, and I think that they like reacted to that similar kinds of abuse in opposite ways. This is like me totally speculating, but that's kind of
I think your speculation is pretty good though. Like, you are
nailed
making
it.
A good, but the fact that he actually said, and you know what's so crazy about Prince?
Meanie is rough, man.
Prince is not even like, he's Mike is allowing Prince live in his head rent free. So
yes.
Yeah.
And Prince has gone on about his life. He's gone on about his life. You know, he's like, "Oh, okay, you're still upset. Like, bro, that was 30 years ago. Can we like squash it?"
But it's a shame that they never buried the hatchet. Hopefully they're doing dance-offs in heaven.
I hope they made it. Hopefully. Okay.
Hopefully, I hope that
back
they made
to
it.
To the American Music Awards.
Yes, American Music
back
Awards.
Back to the American Music Awards. Michael Jackson, who was nominated for 3 of them, wasn't there. Mm. He was already across town at A&M Studios, standing alone in the middle of the parquet floor in Studio A, wearing tight black pants and his signature black jacket, part military, part Sergeant Pepper. With the shoulder pads and the ornate gold embroidering, he wore his jewel-encrusted white socks, the ones that sparkled when he moonwalked, and black aviator sunglasses. Checks out.
What a good outfit.
So Tommy, who is this guy, Trbovic?
Nailed it.
You said it good, because I was not going to know how to say that.
What's his name?
Tommy Trbovic.
Tommy
Trbovic.
Tommy Trbovic.
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 Trbo.
Trbo.
Trbo. Vich.
Trbovic. Trbovic. Tommy.
Trbo, who is the director who is making the music video in the documentary of the session for the charity that was established by the project, which would become We Are the World, the story behind the song, which is that documentary that I mentioned earlier that Jane Fonda like hosted slash narrated. Mm-hmm. So Tommy is there in A&M Studios in Studio A with Michael holding a Norelco video camera on his shoulder, filming Jackson as he's singing the chorus. Tom had a crew of about 50, and they had been there since early afternoon running cables, 50. Rigging lights. Yeah. And right now, though, at this moment, him and Jackson were the only two people in Studio A. He had his right thumb hooked in his pants pocket, his left hip sticking out, his high water pants revealing those socks. Jones sat in the control booth, and they looked at each other through the glass, hearing each other through headsets. Now, nearly 50 massive stars are about to arrive in an hour to record the song, and Jackson is asking Quincy Jones, like, lyrics. They're still laying down the chorus. He's doing his own backing vocals, fussing over, like, this word and that. So he's saying to Quincy, I'm saying you. Should I say you and me or you and I? I like you and me, Quincy said. Okay, Michael said. It's much more soul. Yeah, it's more soulful. Country. Jackson's shifted his slight frame from foot to foot. Country, he said in his high voice, and then he sang. We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make a brighter day. So let's start giving. It's true. We make a better day. Just you and me.
Oh, yeah. You and I would now, be bad in that moment.
Yeah. So as Jackson is singing, Steve Perry.
From Journey.
From Journey fame. Yes. Was also already in the control booth with Jones, wearing headphones, listening to Jackson singing. Perry looked at Jones and out at Jackson and said, am I dreaming? Am I on drugs?
Yes, you are on drugs.
I was about to say the same.
And Jackson laughed right in the middle of the line he was singing. So now it's about 9:30 and the music awards are letting out. And to get into A&M Studios, which was built as a movie lot by Charlie Chaplin in 1917, I guess you have to pull off La Brea. Is it how you say it, babe?
La Brea.
La Brea. Yeah. So I guess you have to pull off La Brea Avenue through a manned gate, which put you in a plaza in the center of the little campus.
Mm-hmm.
So once the American Music Awards ended, everyone was lining up to get through the A&M gate. Quote Esquire. Behind a small ring of shade trees were two entrances. One to the left and up three steps was a thick wooden door that led to the anteroom outside Studio A. The other entrance under the outdoor staircase to the right led to what was known as the Chaplin stage, a room more than half a football field long where they film movies and television shows. This was where the several hundred people who were not singing We Are the World would be hanging out. There was a strict rule. No one except the artists would be allowed in Studio A. No wives, boyfriends, managers, or publicists. No old bandmates from the Commodores. There was no red carpet.
Mm. I love that.
This is Richie, quote. Separating everyone from their families was the toughest part because everyone wanted to walk their wives and mothers and fathers and everyone, the family members, into the recording studio. And we had to go, nope, the families are over to the right. The artists will be over to the left. So Daryl Hall and John Oates rolled in with their manager. Billy Joel was apparently still wearing a scarf over his winter coat because he had just flown in from New York where it was 28 degrees that day.
Jesus Christ.
Was with his fiancée, Christy Brinkley. They arrived, gave each other a quick peck, and then she's thrown in the Chaplin stage while he goes over to, what was it called? Stage A. Studio A.
Studio A, yeah.
Studio A.
What an uptown girl.
Yeah. Dionne Warwick had been doing a residency at the Wynn Las Vegas, and Steve Wynn had given her the night off to fly her to LA for the night in his jet.
Okay, jet.
To do this. quote Warwick, "I was ordered by Mr. Quincy Jones to be there. When Quincy speaks, everyone listens."
I love that. I love the Mr. thrown in there. Mr. Quincy Jones is called for me.
Bette Midler, Cyndi Lauper, Kenny Loggins, Willie Nelson. It was like a record store come to life. Everyone looked a little mystified, smiling, yes, but maybe not quite sure what was happening. So at one point, the gate opened for a man on foot who turned out to be Bruce Springsteen. He was wearing jeans, a black leather jacket, gloves with the fingers cut off.
And wait, and this is in 28 degree weather?
No, it was 28 in New York. This was in L.A.
Okay, I was about to say, I'm like, wow, he must not get cold. Okay, go ahead.
But he had 24 hours ago been on stage in Syracuse, New York.
Ooh, that's cold.
He drove himself to the studio in a rental car. "I got a great parking spot on La Brea," people in the room remember him saying.
Well, I would remember that too. That's basically impossible.
Inside Studio A, a simple sign hung over the entrance, taped to the wall. It said, "Believe."
Oh, Ted Lasso.
No, I'm just kidding. That was a little Ted Lasso humor. Oh, that's not true.
Breaking my heart.
The sign was hung by Quincy Jones, and it said, "Check your egos at the door."
Love that. Well, because Quincy had the biggest ego of them all. And he earned it. I get it. But like, no one could out, you know, no one's going to come in and big dick Quincy Jones.
They're not.
Not in his studio, eh?
Not in his studio.
They better not do it.
So this is from Esquire. "Rock stars don't all know one another, and some of the most famous humans on the planet were meeting for the first time. But in a strange and spontaneous instinct, many of them hugged. Billy Joel hugged Michael Jackson. Loggins hugged Springsteen. Diana Ross hugged Sheila E., while Bob Dylan stood behind them, not hugging anybody."
Smart.
Okay, Bob Dylan was nervous. He had a solo, and he was nervous about singing it.
Because he sucks. What, he sucks at singing.
Yeah. And to calm his nerves, Quincy Jones told him, "It can be like half singing, half talking." Mm. I feel like there was time travel involved, and he took that to heart.
How did he not know
when
that
he was a child?
That could be, yeah, he could do that for his whole career.
That was like his whole career. So Richie told Esquire the first thing he wanted to get out of the way and get right was the chorus. "My job was to kind of make sure everybody stays on point. Quincy was going to hold down the recording session, and Michael was going to be, I laugh at this, he was going to help me keep order. But of course, Michael at that particular time didn't do a lot of talking, and I was exhausted from the TV show. And then we go right into We Are the World. Well, it was a bloody train wreck." Everybody was sort of left-footed, recalls Daryl Hall. We were all like, whoa, what are we doing? Everybody had to figure out how to relate to each other. So everybody started to act like they were in the eighth grade chorus. It was the weirdest thing I've ever experienced. All these superstars, whatever you want to call them, we all turned into junior high kids in chorus. And Quincy became Mr. Jones. That's how it shook out. Laughing like kids.
Hmm. I get
it. So I remember like being in chorus,
yeah,
and like everyone on the risers, and there's this nervous energy, and like somebody like makes an off color joke.
And no one wants to like stand out, right? When you're in like junior high.
Of course not.
So now it's 10:30 p.m. and Ray Charles is in the front row. Many of the artists didn't know he would be there.
Ooh.
They didn't know who would be there, but Ray Charles was definitely a big surprise. So, quote Lionel Richie, "When Ray came in and opened his mouth, we just kind of all fell over in the corner and said, wow, did you hear that? That's Ray Charles. It was brilliant." Bob Dylan was standing between John Oates and Ray Charles, and Oates thought, this is a good place to be in my life right at this moment.
Yeah.
So Michael Jackson, Lionel Richie, and Stevie Wonder had recorded a demo tape and sent it out to the participants before this.
Oh, that's good.
But many of them never even bothered listening to it.
Love that.
And once they got there, they weren't really into it.
Of course they probably weren't.
It's corny.
I don't think anybody liked it, Billy Joel told Esquire. There was a lot of side eye. There was a lot of looking at the other person. And I remember Cyndi Lauper saying, it sounds like a Pepsi commercial. There was a couple of chuckles and a few grunts. That was pretty much the consensus, I think. Nobody was going to say, I'm not doing that.
They're right. It does. That's probably the
turned out
what
okay.
What the cup that Ray Charles was holding, because he was the Pepsi spokesperson at this time.
So now it's 11:45 p.m. and they're trying to lay down the chorus. The lyrics as written said, "We are the ones that make a better day, so let's start giving." But a lot of people in the room were saying brighter day instead of better.
Yeah.
So someone asked, "Is it brighter or better?" And Richie replied, "Whatever one feels good. Better or brighter? Brighter is the one everybody's leaning to, right?" And then everyone looked at their sheet music. Paul Simon leaned over to Tina Turner and Billy Joel and said, "Seems like they're making a change." "I think it should be brighter all the way," Joel said. And then I guess Stevie Wonder was the lone holdout who said, "Better has more bite."
What do y'all feel? Do y'all feel brighter is or do you feel like better? Which one?
I'm going to side with Stevie. I think better is better. Brighter's okay.
Brighter is cheesier.
Brighter is cheesier. I think that's what I'm reacting to. And the eh sound is more pleasing to me than the I sound.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There we are. Stevie for the win. Think? Now I'll go with it. I thought it was fine. Either one, you know, but brighter does seem like, better sounds better.
Brighter. Yeah.
So finally, after the chorus was done, the solos were starting to get laid down. And now it's 2 a.m. Prince hasn't shown up. And he had a solo line right after Jackson's, which, as we mentioned, had been orchestrated by Quincy Jones to try and foster a little peace between them. But Prince didn't come at all. So the line was given to Huey Lewis.
Because he knew it was going to be on site with Michael. That's why.
Yeah. they're gonna dance fight in Studio A.
Now, Aviv, you'll like this. Somewhere between 3 and 4 a.m., Daryl Hall ran into Michael Jackson in the bathroom. Quote Hall. "He asked me if I minded that he had ripped off No Can Do and made it into Billie Jean, which I don't believe it was a ripoff."
No.
Michael says, "I hope you don't mind that I stole it." And I was like, "What? You did a good job of stealing it because I didn't notice." I guess he was referring to the intro, kind of a pumping bass line like my bass line.
So I can't think of Billie Jean is one of the most iconic bass lines of any song ever. And I'm trying to think of the bass line to No Can Do.
I was like, I don't even know that one, but let's listen to it.
Hall & Oates, baby. Oh, yeah, I hear it. Ooh.
Yeah.
I hear it, but this is like very major key oriented, and Billie Jean is very minor key oriented. But I understand how you would listen to this and then go, "I can do better." Yeah.
He told me his name is Billie Jean.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I get
fuck
it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You heard it here second. It was 8:20 in the morning by the time people started filing out. We Are the World sold more than 8 million copies in the U.S. and raised more than $75 million for famine relief.
Fuck.
It won 3 Grammys, Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best Pop Performance by a Duo or Group with Vocal, and Best Music Video.
Song of the Year and Black Song of the Year.
That's so
This is when did they get rid of the black record category?
When they started getting mollywhopped by black folks.
Should have been immediately.
Yeah, but you know what? Let me tell y'all something, right? Oftentimes, black people, and it's not me like trying to go on a little racist rant or anything.
Please.
What happens is we get excited to see one of us on television, right? Even, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You can act like a baboon if you want to, right? It doesn't matter what happens. Hey, as long as we're down, we made it. And a lot of times people will just do, the black folks will just do whatever they can just to say they made it. But overall, they are the ones who end up looking like a fool, you know? Like,
right.
You can look at anything, any type of whatever. And I'm like, of course, like I said, when you're younger, you don't realize this, but you're like, you guys are adults. Did you want to be famous that bad? You, like, no, that's not what happens. But to me, it was trashless. That was, uncalled for. And I really want to ask the people who attended this and said, why did you even accept that award? If they're still alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it definitely is like it's like literally segregation in music. And
right.
Which is interesting.
Separate is inherently not equal.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is, like, I would rather listen to the black anyone that wins like Black Record of the Year, I would prefer to listen to than like White Record of the Year. The default whiteness is the problem. It's like Record of the Year and other, but you know, Black people invented rock and roll. Black people invented basically every type of American music, and so like, why would you not want to listen to, like, it's like very silly how they the organization, the Grammys, tried to kind of minimize Black people's contribution to music when it was like, that was it. There would be no modern music without Black people.
You know what? Let me put a hand clap. I gotta put a hand clap for that. Go ahead. has anybody told you that you invited to the cookout?
No. I eat a lot, so I'll wait for a second invite.
But I'm glad. You know what? I'm glad you recognize that there are some things I don't understand. You know, regarding my history or so, and you're bringing awareness and everything. So I really do commend you for that. I don't know.
Thank you.
It's just what happens is, We don't get the credit that's where it's supposed to be due. And it's like, it seems like this, what I've learned is there's 15% of the population makes up African Americans and a larger percentage of white people. And I don't know what happens. It's just, I guess people give up or so, but I do commend you, like rock and roll, all that. That's amazing. Something they don't teach us in school, you know?
Right.
The interesting thing is, and I think that this is true of many minorities, which is that in order to have culture, you also need to have oppression. Like, you can't make a diamond without years of pressure. And I'm not saying like, well, it was all worth it. But I'm saying like, whiteness, there is no such thing as white culture because there's never been white oppression. And so there's never been art or music or cuisine.
Like an original idea.
Or any original idea that was forced to happen due to a lack of access to the main culture, right? Mm-hmm. That's the problem. That's why there's no such thing as white culture. And yet there's Black culture, and then there's Latin culture, and even like things like Jewish culture, right, come from from being excluded from the main, from the in-group in some way. And Italians and Irish and everyone who was once not considered white.
All right.
That ain't real. Okay.
Yeah, we talk about this. We talk about this on the show a lot. Yeah. You know how capitalism and white supremacy have bred this.
And imperialism.
And imperialism have whitewashed and stolen everything in the name of money, greed, ego.
Exploitation.
Exploitation.
Let's burn it all down. We are the world.
Let me ask you guys one quick question before we get back to, you know, the lyrics and stuff. Have you guys ever had, I guess, an attack from other white people because you did not agree with their ways of, you know, their racism in a sense?
I have.
Does my dad count?
Yeah.
Dad, anybody.
I have from within my family. Parents. Yeah. Parents.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, I'm in a rock and roll band, and once Trump stole the election in 2016, we wrote kind of like a song reflective of our feelings that was turned into an NPR story in like the local LA area. And so we got some feedback like, you're all idiots for being upset that Trump's going to take all your rights away. And we're like, are we idiots for that? Why are you? I think you might be the idiot for celebrating getting your rights taken away, but like, so yeah, but never for the show. Luckily for us, I think we talk about kind of white privilege and the whitewashing of music enough that it either turns people off and they don't listen to us, and the people that do listen to us like are open to understanding this part of like objective history.
Okay.
They don't even have to agree with us right off the bat. They just need to like listen to facts that happened in the world, you know.
Right.
So 8 million copies, $75 million. Fuck. That's so much money.
Yes. And that wasn't all. In January 2010, a massive earthquake devastated Haiti, leading another all-star cast of singers to remake the song entitled "We Are the World 25" for Haiti.
Fuck that. No. Sorry.
This was released as a single on February 12th, 2010. Proceeds from this record aided survivors of the earthquake. This version had an even more massive all-star cast of musicians than the original one.
Fuck.
So,
should we listen to it?
We are going to.
We have to. And we have to compare which one do we like better. Oh, Biebs.
No.
Oh
my God. Bieber.
I didn't even know that they were supposed to read from a paper. I thought they were supposed to know, memorize it.
Who's the woman next to Jennifer Hudson?
That's Nicole Swearinger.
I don't know who any of these fucking people are.
Yeah, she's
are.
From the Pussycat Dolls.
Josh Groban.
Josh Groban.
I don't even know who that is.
He's like an opera singer. Somehow we'll soon make a change. Oh, Tony Bennett. Can't remember shit. Mary.
That's Keisha Cole, sweetie.
That's Keisha Cole?
That's Keisha Cole, not...
I'm going to cut this part out of the podcast because that's fucking embarrassing.
Barbara.
Wow. They're really letting anybody sing in this song.
Yeah, you're going to see. Just you and me.
Is that Mandy Moore? Oh, it's Miley.
That's Miley Cyrus.
I'm face blind. So their cries for yes, Enrique. We can't let them suffer. They need a helping hand. No, someone like we are the children. I like White Puff John.
Yeah, me too. He's from Haiti.
Yes. Pink is from my neighborhood in Pennsylvania. Her dad owns the UPS store in my neighborhood.
How do you see him?
I never see it. This is like where I grew up in Pennsylvania. So not really ever.
But if you just believe, Usher.
Usher. No way we can
fall. I love Usher. Celine Dion.
There's no reason that he needs to be in the ISO booth with her other than he wants to be on camera. Oh, Quincy. Quincy's still kicking, right?
Yes, he's like 90.
Whew.
It's Tony Braxton.
Yeah. The cuts are coming so fast, I'm like having trouble identifying people. Oh my God. Lil Wayne?
I'm like, bro, I just. Because when he started tatting his face, everybody wanted to be like him. I'm like, bro, stupid as hell.
Yeah, he drank so much scissor, he put himself in a coma. Never forget.
Everybody wanted to be like him.
I definitely saw Kanye in there somewhere, too. Who's that? Akon?
That's Akon.
Yeah.
He's got like 10. No, it's Akon.
No. I saw Busta Rhymes separate.
Oh, you know, okay.
I'm not
going
to use that.
Like, no, put some respect on him. I've seen T-Pain in real life. This man is 5'0". I'm not even lying.
I hear he's like a dork. Like, he plays like Call of Duty all day and shit. I love that. Oh. We all need somebody that we can lean on. When you wake up, look around. LL Cool J. A little preview of next week's episode. When the floor breaks, a magic carpet to stand on. We are the world, you know.
Oh, that's Nipsey Hussle. Oh, shoot. He's so high, he's not even on beat. Anytime Jennifer Hudson sings, she like throws shivers. Like my body starts shivering. I'm like, wow.
She's incredible.
She is.
Best,
man.
Best. Oh, there's the Jonas Brothers. Best, best thing American Idol ever gave the world.
I think she honestly should have won, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's better that she didn't because she would have been trapped in a record contract.
Like, yeah, those contracts.
Like Fantasia was.
Yeah. Like Kelly was. Kelly had to struggle to get out of it. And they gave her like an eating disorder and stuff.
That's just living in the USA, buddy.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges is there doing absolutely nothing. Not moving his lips, no headphones on, just looking around.
Y'all know why Clef John tried to run for president of Haiti and he lost.
Really?
He did. He tried to run for president.
I know that he has that song, If I Was President.
He does?
Yeah. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday. They go back to work on Monday.
What type of crap? That's very violent.
It is. I think he was talking about the U.S., but yeah. It came out around the first Obama election, maybe the second Obama election, but it's a good track. I will say, hot take, I think that the groove in this one is better.
Mm-hmm.
It's a better
I like
groove.
It. Yeah. Does it slap?
It slaps. Minor slap.
Minor slappage.
I like it. I like it.
So you're gonna tell us who's in this
I will.
List of hitters?
Let's do it. Okay, right. So we're going to start with our conductors. So you have Quincy Jones, Lionel Richie, Mervin Warren. Not sure who that is.
Right. Not me either.
Then you have Justin Bieber, Nicole Scherzinger. She was in the Pussycat Dolls. Jennifer Hudson, Jennifer Nettles, Josh Groban, Tony Bennett. Oh, Mary J. Blige was there, so you were right, but that was
you motherfucker.
I think that was her, though.
You gave me so much white guilt for confusing Mary J. Blige.
I thought that was Keisha Cole, though.
Keisha Cole.
Sorry.
They might both be there.
Okay, they probably were. Toni Braxton, Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Barbara Streisand, Miley Cyrus, Enrique Iglesias, Jamie Foxx, Wyclef John, Adam Levine, Pink, Bebe Winans, Usher. That's B.B. Winans. I should know this because he's a gospel singer. I listen to that. Usher, Celine Dion, Arundhati on guitar, Fergie, Nick Jonas, Mary Mary, Isaac Slade, Carlos Santana, Lil Wayne, Akon, T-Pain, LL Cool J, Will.i.am, Snoop Dogg, Nipsey Hussle, Busta Rhymes, Swizz Beatz, Kid Cudi, Eazy, Man, Kanye West. Then you have Patty Austin. Wow, more people. Lovely.
Jesus.
Philip Bailey, Piero Barone, Fonzworth Bentley. He doesn't sing. What's his purpose?
Fonzworth Bentley, we talked about him in our Hey Ya episode. He just holds an umbrella.
Yeah, we did.
Ignacia Boschetto, Busy Bone, El DeBarge, Ethan Bortnick, Brandy. I didn't even see Brandy. Jeff Bridges, Zach Brown, Christian Bush, Natalie Cole, Harry Connick Jr., Nika Costa, Faith Evans, Melanie Fiona, Sean Garrett, Tyrese Gibson, Gianluca Ginobili, Anthony Hamilton, Carrie Hilson, John Legend, Julianne Hough, India Irie, Randy Jackson, Taj Jackson, Terrell Jesus Jackson, Christ. TJ Jackson, Bobby McFerrin, and it continues. Vin Diesel. What the hell is he there for?
Vin Diesel.
Al Jardine, Jimmy John Lewis, Ralph Johnson, the Jonas Brothers, Joe Jonas and Kevin Jonas, Rashida Jones, that's Quincy's daughter. Gladys Knight, Benji Madden, Joel Madden, Catherine McPhee, Jason Mraz, Maya, Frida Payne, A.R. Rahman, Red One, Nicole Richie, Raphael Sadiq, Chico DeBarge, Trey Songz, Music Soul Child, Jordan Sparks, Robin Thicke, Rob Thomas, Vince Vaughn, Maren.
Vince Vaughn?
And Wilson, Brian Wilson, and Nancy Wilson.
Wow. That is a lot of fucking people. And a very wide range of people.
Well, NPR named it one of the worst ideas of 2010. This is from a December 21st, 2010 article. We Are the World, the charity single by which all other charity singles are measured, turned 25 this year, just in time for the decade's first humanitarian crisis. Recorded February 1 in a marathon session, We Are the World 25 for Haiti was an ambitious update. It boasted an all-new lineup ranging in age from the pubescent Justin Bieber to octogenarian Tony Bennett. It incorporated modern twists, auto-tune solos by T-Pain and Akon, a rap break penned by will.i.am, a dash of Creole from Wyclef. After debuting at the Winter Olympics, the remake entered the charts at number 2 and sold 250,000 downloads in 3 days. And then, just as suddenly, it was gone. A few weeks after its release, We Are the World 25 had been all but abandoned by radio. Media coverage tapered off, and the single spent the remainder of its time on the charts languishing behind Kesha's TikTok. What happened? At least some of it came down to taste. Critics far and wide slammed the track, dismissing the rap verse as pandering, the auto-tune as straight-up tacky. The choice of talent took some heat as well. With over 80 participants, the group included more than a few sub-celebs. Saturday Night Live parodied the song a few weeks later and gleefully pointed out the D-listers. It's Farnsworth Bentley. He was the fella who held the umbrella for P. Diddy. But taste isn't everything. We Are the World 25 may have been overwrought and underwhelming, but it also had the misfortune of being released in 2010, when just about every principle that made the original We Are the World a success has been dismantled. To justly compare the two, one must first acknowledge a few big-picture truths about our time. And then these are the truths, which I will just read them, but I won't read the explanations. Music doesn't sell like it used to. True. Consumers are more empowered than ever.
True.
Getting informed is easy. Fame isn't what it used to be. Collaboration is commonplace.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily want to jump the gun here, but this just reminds me of the thing that like Gal Gadot did at the beginning of the pandemic, where she like got all of her friends to sing Imagine in the backyard, and it was the most obnoxious thing ever.
Yeah, like, I didn't realize she was behind that, but I remember cringing.
Thought it was her deal, but yeah, really, really not great. But yeah, now everyone just collaborates over social media.
So yeah, so they mentioned like Saturday Night Live parodied it, and the original had quite a few parodies too. Kendra, did you want to talk about any of those?
Yes, the parodies. Thank you so much for bringing that out. The parodies are, it included in Living Color, it ran a skit called Career Aid. Okay. Married with Children. You guys know that like Jamie Foxx was on in Living Color as well.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Married with Children had an episode called Rock of Ages. Okay. That parodied it with the Bundy family title, We Are the Old, just to name a few. So, yes. And I honestly feel like, you know, this, you had to be the coolest person in, like, in the world if you got invited to sing on a track or just be in a part of the video.
Yeah.
Just wanted to put that out.
Yeah.
Honestly, super cool. One of the parodies that I wanted to bring up, a specifically special one, is the one from Parks and Recreation.
Ooh, should we go out on that this week?
Yeah. Do you want to go out on that this week? So one of the seasons of Parks and Recreation, Leslie Knope is running for city council, and Andy Dwyer, our problematic king, Chris Pratt, composes a song called Catch Your Dreams, and they do like a super group We Are the World type song. And the only reason that this one is special is because, well, Quincy Jones's daughter is in the show.
So,
we're gonna go out this week on Catch Your Dreams by Mouse Rat. So, Kendra, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Instagram is The Kendra Crump Show. D as in the, K-Y, N as in Nancy, D-R-A, C-R-U-M-P, Show, S-H-O-W. And my YouTube is Kendra Crump, K-Y-N-D-R-A, space, C-R-U-M-E.
What is your show like? What do you talk about?
I talk about horrible podcasters. I talk about, because I like, they're going to do it to me. No, you're fine. You don't have to apologize. You guys are good. Your name's not going to be up on there.
We'll see.
Anyway, unless y'all, you know, literally gave me a waste of my time. So I talk about horrible podcasters because I want you guys to look out for them just like, you know, whatever it might be.
Doing the world a service.
Of course. Listen, I don't want y'all mollywhopping them. They're going to, you know, I let my words mollywhop them. I ban stuff. Like, I want to ban people who park over the line, you know? So whatever you want to ban, you just ban. And it's like a panel of other people.
I want to ban washing machine doors that lock your clothes inside. Why is that a thing? I keep tweeting about it. Nobody cares about this. This is a real issue, okay? Why would your clothes need to be behind a locked door while they're just shimming around getting clean?
I think because so the water won't come up and splash and hit you, maybe. That's what I think. So people won't. So kids won't jump in there, you know.
So kids won't jump in.
I don't know.
Okay, that's the first viable answer I've heard.
Okay, cool. That sounds better than the first one. But yeah, we have fun. It's nothing but laughs. So we just sit here and we talk about typically my day and what happened. So.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Providing insight into We Are the World. What an amazingly weird song. And you can find us on the internet. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Lyrics for Lunch. And for longer and weirder stuff, you can shoot us an email at lyricsforlunch@gmail.com.
If you want to support the show, like and subscribe, tell your friends about us, post us on Instagram, Facebook, tell your grandma, your mom. Definitely, you can also support the show by going to our website, lyricsforlunch.com, clicking that little support button. That will take you to a page on Anchor that should allow you to do so. We had a little hiccup with Anchor recently, but they have assured us that it's back up and running. So thank you so much to everyone who supports the show.
Tell your racist uncle
Please.
To listen to our show.
Please tell your racist uncle, parents, any boomer that you know to listen to our show.
And tune in next week when I will be back in the driver's seat talking about 2013's worst idea ever, the LL Cool J Brad Paisley collaboration called Accidental Racist.
You told me it was going to be a secret and now I know.
Well, this is me revealing the secret
to you. This
is
the big reveal.
This is the big reveal.
Sacre bleu!
And until next time, I'm Aviv Rubenstein.
I'm Lindsay Tucker.
And I'm Kendra Crump.
Saying, we're the world.
Yes, we are the world. Heal the world. Just be a better person in this world.
Feed the world. But make sure they know it's Christmas first.
Stuff it and mount it to your heart.